And now for the illustrious and fun stuff. Dirk May, who is 25 years professional IT experience in cybersecurity and a lot of other stuff, even rockets, is going to talk about cryptography 101. So if you don't know about cryptography, or if you know about cryptography, you can learn something new. Please, Dirk.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to my talk. Let's see, it's a nice number of people showing up. Let's start. Who am I? I'm Dirk. I'm poor on my Angel Shift badge, so you can put anything on it, apparently, that you want. I use a C-shell. I do not do mail, and I hack the planet for my daily plan. So anybody knows what the finger commands away? Ooh. Those are the gray guys, no. Let's continue with that. I have one slide introduction of myself. I was born in 1972. This is my first computer. Anybody knows it? Yay! TI-99-4A. Okay, this is my second computer. More familiar? Commodore 64. You can actually buy one because somebody bought the brand and they're making ASIC. They're making FPGAs with Commodore 64s on it. So help them out a bit. Third computer? Yeah, which one? Which number? 500, good. Okay, I graduated in 2000. Does anybody know what happened in 2000? It was a great time to graduate. So we had a lot of fun there. So, but some track record. I designed parts of the software of this system. It's one of the biggest robotic systems in the Netherlands. It's called the Maaslandkering in Rotterdam. It's a search barrier. So it's an autonomous system. Everything should work. If the water tide gets too high, then it closes automatically and secures the Netherlands. 2006, I started at Fox IT as a cryptographer. That's why I have some experience in cryptography I can talk about, but not all, sadly. Does anybody know this booklet? It's the Dutch passport, yeah. There's an e-passport in it, and every passport in the Netherlands is going through my code to personalize it with the fingerprints, picture, stuff like that. So that's my code. Nobody knows it, and please don't share it outside this or this. It's a record, never mind. 2012, I moved to Curaçao for a while. Then I came back to the Netherlands. Started my own company. I can only mention it once. I'm part of the Quality and Transparency Committee of Cyberveilig Nederland, which is a branch organization. And I had, not anymore, an MT function at DIVD. But main question is, why am I here? Not to be too philosophical, it's more about why am I giving you this talk. I was at a conference last year, and Dirk Jan Mollema was telling a story about hacking Azure AD. And he said, well, this happens and this happens, and we get this protocol, and it's crypto here, crypto there. And I thought it was, okay, that's a good place to use this kind of crypto. And I looked around, and everybody was, And these were all professionals, but actually, they didn't know at all what they meant with crypto here, crypto there. So that's why I decided to make a talk about what's cryptography. So, not the coins, we're going to mention the coins later on. I want to do this in an open fashion, informal. You can ask questions anytime you want. If something is unclear, I will explain it to you. If I don't know it, you can explain it to me. So let's go. What we're going to talk about is introduction. We just did that. I'm going to explain to you what crypto and crypto is not. I'm going to touch cryptocurrency. And why it's called cryptocurrency, because I found it is the second time I do the talk. And the first time they said, I was actually here for the Bitcoin. There is some Bitcoin in it. You can always donate, by the way, but it's, you know. And I'm going to touch up on a bit of post-quantum crypto. because it's informal, hopefully both way directions, I'm going to do something different now. You have any questions? None at all? Something you want to know about cryptography? Yep.
Interaction on breaking ice.
Yeah.
So now is the first question being asked, and the first question is, will there be a follow-up question?
Will there be a what?
A follow-up question. So there is now a start, and yeah, any questions?
No questions. No, there's no. I did the same slide in the end, so you can have questions again. So if something is unclear, you can always come back. Sometimes people want to know, oh, can you mention that? Can you mention that? So that's the main idea.
We hear something about the basics, like key exchange and like this Alice and Bob stories, and well, yeah.
You're in the right place, I hope. And otherwise, you can always ask me later because I'm walking around here and I can explain anything if you want. No? Let's start with what cryptography is not, okay? Cryptography is not the same as encoding. Encoding is used for machine-to-machine communication. It's not cryptography because nothing is encrypted. I give you a few examples. Whoop. I hope. Hold on. I just make a guessing game. If this is encoding, you should be able to recognize it. You should be able to see it as a human being. You should be able to kind of understand what is happening. Can somebody tell me what number one is? Base64. Why is it used? Yeah? Very good. So it's a way to transfer data over a line that doesn't know how to work with control characters, which we use in ASCII. Why is it called Base64? We use 64 characters, right. So it's six bit communication. OK, second one. Yep. It's simpler than that. Hexadecimal, right. Why is it written like this? It's because it's human readable now. Usually it's just a string of bits. You make a string of bytes of it. You can read it a bit more and put a /x on it so you know that it's hexadecimal. Okay. Third one. It's a bit of an older communication protocol. Morse code, right, very good. You know what it says? Neither do I. And the fourth one. If you do CTFs, you should be able to recognize this. It is sometimes mentioned as being a cryptographic protocol, and it's a bit. If you look at the difference between encoding and cryptography and encrypting, and this is going to be a problem later on, so please mention it if I say it wrong. The difference between encoding and encryption is: for encryption, you need an algorithm, and for encoding, the data should be the same, about the same. And so, the encryption, you need some input in it, so it's called the key. And if you change a bit of the key, then you should also have a different output. So, I'm going to ask again. Anybody know what the fourth one is? It's a bit of a. Yeah. How many? No, Caesar is not 13. Three, yeah. So what does it say? Because you can do this by head. The answer is coming up anyways. It's always a nice practice. No, it's an encoding system. Caesar used this to encode his messages onto his slaves, and then tattooed it on his head. They let the hair grow back on, sent them overseas. The slaves got killed in the end. They shaved off the head, and then you can read the message. So it wasn't a very good time to be a slave, especially if you were a messenger beside. Okay, so this is the correct answer to the first one. This appears to be the answer to the second one. Oh. I have three other encoding examples, and this is typical machine-to-machine interfacing. So this is a protocol, one machine talks to another machine, and then you want to have it a bit encoded because you want to make sure that the other machine is understanding the first machine. So what's the leftmost one? JSON, middle one, XML, which one? Yeah, very, very good. I have to look myself at my own slides. So. Sometimes you have some environmental sensory information coming out of the world, and this is also encoding. And it is used to encode the rotary position of an axle inside the robotic system, for instance. Does anybody have some robotic experience? You know what this is called? This is Hoffman. Now this is the Hoffman encoding. You can also use it for fax machines. Nobody knows this one. The very important thing is if you look at all the circles, you see all kind of dots, and there's always only changing one dot if you rotate it. So there's never any moment that two of the bits are changing in this when you rotate this this thing. Okay, the next one is a very short movie, and I think the old people. No offense, may be able to recognize it. I choose not to use sound because reasons. The people who recognize it will know why I didn't use sound. Anyone trying to make a shot? No, it's a great movie though. No, this is a fax machine contacting another fax machine. And a fax machine, for the uninitiated, it's a bit like signal, but analog. Guess that's the best description. So, remember, Base64 is not encryption. If you use Base64 to encrypt your text, being a hacker, I would really love that. Being a pen tester, you get a remark. All right. Let's start with the first primitives of cryptography. One is probably the most easiest to explain. Hashes. A hash is something we use in cryptography for a few different in a few different ways. It's a one-way function, so it's really hard to go from. It's really easy to go from A to B, but it's really hard to go back. And that's the main advantage of a hash. It has an avalanche effect, and that means that if you change one bit, the whole hash will change, hopefully. And it's most of the time used for signing and proving. You understand this? How can I prove anything with the one-way function? I will explain it in the next slide. And these are some example hashes, hash algorithms. Most of you probably know MD5. Yeah, will you use it? Why not? Not safe anymore. Okay, which one starts to become safe from here on? No, it's a trick question. Now, you're going to use SHA-0 because SHA-0 does exist. Yeah, nobody uses it now. SHA-1, 2, 256, 3, 312, no, yeah. From SHA-2, it's relatively safe. If you want to be really safe, use a combination. Because if you have if you have a piece of data and you want to create the hash of it, and you can always prove that if you don't change the data and you create the same hash of it, you get the same number. And that's the main thing. If you're using MD5, it's too easy to brute force it. This is a hash function. You can forget about this just immediately because it's just a way to show that it's only one. You see all the arrows going from down, from the top level to the down levels, meaning it's really hard to go back. That's what the picture says. This is the example of the of the avalanche effect. You can see if I change one single character, actually it's changing one bit, password and password with a capitalized P. It's only changing one bit. You see the whole hash, and this is MD5 on top. The whole hash is changing. And this has a great advantage. If you change one bit in a piece of text or a piece of binary, you can immediately detect that it is changed in your by using the hash of it. So, you guys download stuff from the internet? Do you always check it? I would. So, but it's that's something that that can avoid a lot of shitty stuff on your system, unless when they when you get an attack where the binary is attacked in an attack called supply chain attack. You also have to change the hash. So, if the hash is published on a different website, you're actually pretty safe if it's not if the binary is not changed. So, you should be using it for critical software. Second one is SHA-1. You can also see one bit is a change, is changing the whole hash. And SHA-2 is also. And you also see that SHA-2 is way longer because you use twice as many bits to calculate your hash. Any questions so far on hashes? All clear? Great. How do you attack hashes? This is the most fun part, of course. The easiest way to attack hashes is brute forcing. It happens every now and then that somebody loses a database on the internet containing hashes, because you should always store your password in hashes, and not in plain in your database. If you're using MD5 as a hash, I can attack you with about 150 billion different passwords within 1 second on this laptop. It's an M1, Apple M1. If people, if you have Apple enthusiasts, it's 5 years old, I guess. It only takes 30 seconds to boot up, but after that, it's 1 second to do 160 billion passwords through it. I win, so. The other one is a birthday attack. Because the hash is much smaller than the original binary, you can create another binary which apparently has the same hash. This has to do with collection. Verzamelingsleer. Any Dutch who can translate that? A set theory, right. Has to do with set theory, because the original set is way larger than the resulting set, so you can have a birthday attack getting the same hash out of it. And the third one is an extension attack. If at one point you know in the algorithm a certain state of the algorithm, you can calculate from there on the next hashes and the next hashes, and then you can attack the hash system by abusing the algorithm. So if you're a CTFer, any CTFers? Two. There's an example of Hacker Hotel 2025 CTF. This is actually, this talk was also given in Hacker Hotel, and I had a lot of solves of the original CTF over there, hidden inside my presentation. But, okay, how can you protect against these attacks? Because, you know, it's a war out there, and the hackers will always win, unless the non-hackers will have a better algorithms. So you can protect against this. Protecting against brute force is pretty easy. You just use PBKDF2, which is a hash algorithm that's not... it's very, very... advanced, but it just hashes an independent number of times, which makes it really slow to brute force the system. You, as a user, you won't notice, because it's still a microsecond for verifying your password. It's just very slow on doing it automatically. Another thing is salting or peppering, which means you actually change the binary bit using passwords or pre-initialized values. Against the extension attack, if you use SHA-3, it's not possible anymore because the state machine has changed. Okay. The top one is the PBKDF. And if you look at it, it's consisting of a few fields. The first one is the type, what are you hashing, because you have different versions. The second one is how many times it's getting hashed. That makes the algorithm slower and slower. And the third one is the hash itself. And the one on the bottom is a Kerberos hash. And it has the same, there's an ID in it. And there's a salt in it, which means that every time you're hashing, it's initialized in a different way. Okay. Any questions about hashing? Last part was a bit harder than the first part. Yeah, the salt is salt. So you can put whatever you want over there. Using ASCII is not the best way to solve it, but you can put anything in there. So it's just a kind of a password. So. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but the top one is a different algorithm. It doesn't use salt. The dollar sign is used as a separation character. So if you're attacking a hash system, I have this weird a collection of passwords from everybody, and it's really nice if you want to decrypt. You cannot decrypt. If you want to brute force the passwords, that you know what kind of hashes you're using, so you can tweak your machine that is hashing it. So I have a multi GPU machine at the office, and then we just ram these huge files with database passwords through it. And it's nice to know if it's not MD5, then I don't have to test on MD5. So I can recognize the hashes, and if I see something like this, it's like not even going to try. That will only, that is like saying thank you to an AI. Doesn't make any sense, and it only uses energy. Okay. Let's continue about encryption and decryption. Oh, thank you. Cryptography stands for the ancient Greek kryptos and kryptos. Kryptos. My Greek is horrible. So it means secret writing. The Greek used a few ways to do this. They used skital, which is a pole, and they wrapped text around it, and only on one side of the pole you could actually read the text. These are really old ways of cryptography. You have two different kinds, and we're going to discuss them both. Is it symmetric and asymmetric? And good crypto, the result of your crypto text, you got plain text, you encrypt it, and you get the crypted text, should look like noise. That's where you want to go. Because noise is the maximum amount of entropy, and if you have the maximum amount of entropy, you cannot guess what the original text was. So you want to have as much noise as possible. Talking about entropy, has somebody seen this before? You know what it, you know what it is? Well, you can say it because you have a. This is the lava rand from Cloudflare, and this is actually generating entropy for the cryptographic systems at Cloudflare. You know Cloudflare, the WAF for web applications. So this is creating the entropy. So it makes a picture every second, and every time a lamp is in a different shape, and then you get a different value, and that way you have a different type of. Anybody not familiar with cryptography, will learn three names now, which are the most important names we have. These are Alice and Bob, and Alice has a message she wants to send to Bob. It's a death by PowerPoint. This, huh? And Eve, it's always painted in red in my slides, Eve wants to read it. Well, you saw the message was a plain text message, but people who missed it, I can show it again. No. It was a plain text message, so if Eve wants to know what's in it, it's very simple. Grabs the message, reads it, and sends it on to Bob. Is there any way that Bob knows that the message from Alice is read? No? Was it possible to read the message? Yeah, so how can you avoid this? We going to use base 64, right? No. Now we're going to use something else. But we're going to use symmetric encryption. That's the easiest part of encryption. And why is it called symmetric? I have a nice PowerPoint slide also. Oh, and this I have some examples of symmetric. It's a stream cipher. That means it's a you get a stream of data, and it's ciphering. And then the other side of the algorithm, it's a stream of data you don't know. So that's the noise in the other side. The best one you can use here is a one-time pad. Is anybody familiar with one-time pad? Can you explain it? Yeah. Yeah. The trick in a one-time pad, it's a good answer. The trick in a one-time pad is that the password you're using to decrypt is longer than the original text. So you always have the maximum amount of entropy. So you always have noise in the end, because there's no way you can detect the original key used for the algorithm, and you're pretty safe. There's a few ways to calculate this. I know in Russia they had big antennas on the window on the embassies, and they were just catching noise coming from atmospheric interference. And then they recorded it, made letters of it, and then they sent it to the spies so that they can communicate with the head office. You also have block ciphers, which are AIS, maybe a bit more familiar. DES3. The original name of DES is Lucifer, by the way, which is pretty cool, made by IBM those days. You got some other ones like RC5 and Blowfish, which are safer and unsafer. So the data out of it, it's looking less or more than on noise than the other ones. Symmetric algorithm is really fast to use. So actually, if you use TLS, for instance, you always use symmetric encryption, because it's just generate the key, add it to the plain text, you get a crypted text, you just keep repeating that. It's really easy. And it's based on shared keys. That's why it's called symmetric. So, how do you get shared keys to other people? There used to be, there used to be key sharing parties. Who knows key sharing parties? Oh, that's pretty much. I'm surprised. Doesn't happen that often anymore. If you want to have safe communication, you just gather up, grab a beer, bring your key, share a key with people you trust, and then go home again. Now, the fun is that you both have the same key, so you have a key shared, and you can communicate on a secure channel from there. So that's what Bob's going to do. He's going to Alice, you share the key, Bob takes the key home, and now they can communicate with the same key. So Alice is sending a message to Bob again, encrypts it with her key. There's some Morse code going over, so it was a really easy encryption or Braille code. Eve cannot read it because she doesn't have the key. Bob does have the key, so he can decrypt it, and he can read the message. These are the blocks inside the DES algorithm. This is going to be a bit more technical, so I'm just going to go through it a bit faster. If anybody says there's an XBOK or a Feistel algorithm in it, they look like this. So I'm going through it that fast. If you want to know the details, you can always come to me and I'll explain it to you. Basically, an SBOX is you have three inputs, so you get five outputs, and a Feistel is a mixer. So it just mixes bits. Always, this is always working on bit level, so it's just mixing bits. And if you compare this with DES3, for instance, you do the whole stuff three times. So that's the three in DES3. Funny part is you can make it a bit harder. If you look at, I don't know if you can read it very well over there, but because it's pretty small, there are a few different modes. And you see that the modes who are more protective, for instance, the CBC is probably most used. You see a reverse, that's fast. You see the output of the noise is used as a key for the input of the next playing character. And that makes it really mixed, and it makes it look like noise. There is one, however, that doesn't do it. Can you locate which one that doesn't have feedback loop? That's ECB. It uses the same key over and over and over again. So if you want to know if that's really noise, I can show you and you can probably recognize. Yeah, who is this? It's Tuxrite. So this is encoded with, encrypted with ECB code. And it's probably not as secure as you would like to have it. Okay, continuing to asymmetric encryption. Any questions on symmetric encryption? No, asymmetric encryption. Well, it's kind of in the name. It's not symmetric, so people don't use a shared key. It's pretty expensive to use because it's you have a choice between using prime numbers and you multiply them together and prime numbers of 150 plus characters. You can imagine that it's really expensive to multiply 250 characters with each other. It's used all over the internet, especially in the Diffie-Hellman's, the key generation part, where you can actually use it to generate a shared key and then use the shared key again to communicate. The most popular is probably RSA. So everybody is using that every day, most of the time without knowing it. And this is exactly why I'm here. So, problem with RSA, it's not quantum proof. Can anyone explain me why? Neither can I. That's it. Yeah, I can. The talk's over there now. It has to do with the, I think you need 1,048 qubits to calculate you need 1,048 qubits to calculate the Shor algorithm where you can guess all PKIs. And I guess the guys from Google are at 105 qubits, something like that. So they're not there yet. Until they do, we're safe-ish. Should change now if you're in charge of that. So here we have Alice and Bob again. So I'm going to explain how it works a bit. Problem is, they cannot meet each other because Alice lives on one side of the world, in the ocean, and Bob lives on the other side of the world, in the ocean. So yeah, it's hard to read each other. So how do they do it? Alice generates a key pair, a private key and a public key. And she keeps the private key, and Bob does the same. So he keeps his private key and he sends his public key to the other one, without or with Eve mentioning it. Would it be a problem if Eve would mention it? Would see it with the public key? No, it's not called public for nothing, so it doesn't matter. And here it gets a bit weird. Alice wants to send a message to Bob. She encrypts it with her public key. She sends it over the internet. Eve cannot read it because you cannot decrypt with your public key. You can only encrypt with your public key. But Bob has the private key. Oh. God. Again. Okay. Alice encrypts it with the public key of Bob. Bob can only decrypt it with his private key. So and Eve cannot read it because you cannot decrypt it with the public key of Bob or Alice. So now Bob is decrypting it with his private key, and it's secure. Eve cannot read the message, Eve cannot decrypt it, and it's safe. TLS is doing something like that. So I'm not going to do that all. So there is a connection made. They're going to check certificates both ways in the web server. If it's okay, if the server is trusted, it sends a challenge, encrypted with the public key to the server, and the public key is in the certificate. Server decodes it, sends it back, and they can exchange data. The challenge they send is the, anybody knows? It's the symmetric key they use for the connection. It's that simple. Because if the server cannot decrypt it, you cannot use the key. They cannot have a secure channel. Yeah? So if it gets harder, I just go faster, right? You can also use it a different way around. Suppose Alice wants to send something to Bob, but she wants to know if it's changed. Not, it doesn't matter if it's read, if it's read by Eve, but she don't want to have it changed. So Alice is signing a document with her private key. Eve can read it, but cannot alter it because you cannot verify it with a, you can only verify it with the public key of Alice. So Alice has a key. She signs it with her own private key, which nobody has. So she's the only one who can sign it. And you can only verify it with the public key part of her key pair. So Eve can read it, but you cannot change it because then it's not verifiable anymore. Okay? So far for the encryption and decryption of the cryptography. A very small part about crypto in the blockchain. I think only the Dutch get this joke. No? You get it as a non-Dutch? Okay. I'll explain it later on. Right now, as crypto, I'm using Bitcoin, right? And why is it called cryptocurrency? There's only two reasons why it's called. The first one, Bitcoin is using a hash game where they try to get calculate the next block by generating a hash starting with a number of zeros, which is really hard. And as soon as you calculate one, you can get the right to be the next block. And the next block, you actually get some Bitcoin for it still. So if you get the next block, I think you have 200K, 300K. So you get 3 Bitcoin for generating the block. And what's really important, they sign the previous block. So you have one block. You calculate the hash of the block. You put it in the next block. And you keep doing that. And that means that everything before the previous block, including the hash, will never change. And that's why it's called cryptocurrency in the blockchain. So the blockchain is always referring to the previous block, and because you cannot change it, because you know the hash, and you know the hash is one bit different than the hash changes, it cannot change in the past, so in the previous blocks. Any questions on cryptocurrency? Don't buy now, it's too expensive. Then we have something about quantum crypto. What's not quantum safe? That's because we're using a multiplication of prime numbers which quantum computers will be able to generate or calculate with Shor's algorithm. It's not safe anymore, but you can also use it for really nice things in cryptography. If you use a quantum effect called entanglement, you can use shared keys over a distance of light years, and these will always be the same. So you can make a communication channel over it, which cannot be hacked. And that's called the superposition. So you can entangle quantum parts and put them on two sides of the universe. If you change one, the other one will also change. So you have the most secure communication channel possible. Okay. If you want to do some crypto CTFs, these are the most likely tool. If you want to have some deeper experience with it, go to the JCrypt tool, which explains all the crypto algorithms which are present in the, used in the world in a really nice way. I got a tip. I forgot the name. Can you repeat it? Christopher Haar? Christopher Parr. He has a YouTube channel with a number of explanations of cryptography. I haven't seen it yet. I was recommended yesterday. So try that too. And CyberChef, which is able to do a lot of cryptography stuff if you want to do CTFs. So, last slide. Familiar? Any questions or more questions than you start?
Can we? Would you repeat the question so we get it for the online?
Is there a mechanism for the key exchange in asymmetric key communication? Right. Yeah. No. Yeah, grabbing the exchange is okay. No, it's not okay. You have the public key and the public key and the private key, right? And the private key is low. If you have a server and a client, the server is offering a certificate holding the public key, and it has its own private key. So the public key is at the client. The client generates a key. Encrypts it with the public key of the server, and after that it's not readable anymore because you cannot decrypt using a public key, and the server can decrypt it with its private key. Then it sends something back, and if it's not the same as a challenge it was sent at the client part, then you know it's a secure channel. Yeah. Yeah, they just generate keys on both sides, and then they have a secure channel. And this is really slow, resource-extensive cryptography algorithms. And then they have they end up with one of the challenges used as the shared key in the end. It's hard. I can draw it out for you. That may be easier to understand. Yeah, but cryptography is not easy. So just trying to scratch the top surface a bit. Yeah, but I can explain it to you when I draw it. Yeah.
Okay. Any more questions?
So the question is, do we have post-quantum cryptography algorithms, yeah, and how heavy are they?
Yes, there are post-quantum. So there are two big algorithms used, which are not exactly quantum safe. That is a multiplication of big prime numbers, which we use now most of the times. That's RSA. We have elliptic curve. Public key, private key, where you have a weird curve, and then you have some XOR. If you know point A, you know point B, and you can calculate point C, but you cannot calculate it backwards. And this is probably also solvable by quantum systems. And then we have the lattice way to make calculation, because you want to go in one direction and not be able to go back. And you have lattice-based calculations and algorithms, which are not quantum. Not affected by quantum systems because the variables are too large. There are too many variables.
Will you be able to run such an algorithm on microcontrollers?
Not yet. It will be, because microcontrollers are. If you saw my first computer, my second computer, the Commodore 64. If you get a microcontroller nowadays, it's weird how much power there is in it. So it will be possible. Will it be fast? It only has to make the calculation once, if it's okay. You're not brute forcing on it. So, and then you have to wait as a user. You have to wait a second. That's okay.
So, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much for your attention. If you have any questions, we are located in Cyberfort, which is on the edge. We have poffertjes later on if you want to come by. And I thank you for your attention.